guest today has spent more than 25 years doing something most companies say they want, but rarely pull off, making technology actually deliver on a promise to its customers. Raj Rao has led transformation at some of the most recognizable names in business. At Salesforce, he was part of the Business Excellence team, a group that didn't just sell the vision of customer success, they helped the world's largest companies live it. Before and since, he has worked for organizations like Ford Motor Company and Dell EMC, driving the kind of change that shows up in real numbers. We're talking $200 million in cost savings and sales cycles that move 40% faster. But here's what really makes Raj different from most who talk about transformation. He starts with the customer journey and works backwards, not the other way around. He spent his career asking the uncomfortable question nobody wants to sit with long enough. Why are we actually doing this? And then he stays in the room until the real answer presents itself. Today, we're going to get into why customer experience is still so broken after everything we've learned, how AI is finally exposing the silos that have been holding companies back for decades, and what courageous leadership actually looks like when transformation gets hard. We welcome Raj to the podcast. Welcome, Raj, to Business Uncomplicated. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you two?
We're doing
good.
Nice
to be with you.
We are super happy to have you.
Well, the reason why I'm excited is because, one, we have a long history together from Salesforce. And you were in one of those groups in Salesforce that I considered the special group. And I mean that by saying it wasn't about technology, right? Like, there's so much of a product company that's about the technology and very little at times about how that technology really drives outcomes. And the Business Excellence team was that unicorn.
A unicorn. I'm still thinking through the special designation. I think you meant it in a positive way.
But in fairness, you guys were one of the preeminent groups. Like, nobody had heard of customer success until Salesforce is like, hey, watch me. And to be part of that maturity and that learning process is really, really spectacular.
Yeah. I'm agreeing, Andy. It's self-serving for us, but it definitely agree. And then within our success organization, having this special group, I'm using the word special now, focused on, you know, business excellence, meaning like business outcomes, talk through about what is like that, what we're after, what are our customers after and why, and not lead with technology, even though we're technology and our DNA is technology. So that's what made us, that group of people special and that leadership special.
And you guys were really focused on the customer experience. When we think about CS, you know, Andy, and you pointed out that Salesforce really was the founder of CS or really put CS on the map, right? I think prior to that, it was really support, right? That's how people would have interpreted CS, right? But you guys kind of took it to a different level and really focused on the customer outcomes, as you said, and the customer experience. So now we're in a really different world with AI. And so I want to start and talk a little bit about customer experience. And I'll ask the provocative question, why is it so broken still after all we know about it with companies like Gainsight and Salesforce really putting CS on the map? Why is the customer experience in your mind still should be front and center and it probably isn't as much as it should be?
I love this question because all of us think about this all the time. And now with AI, there's like technology that's available to us that can help get us to a better place. But I think when I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking about like, what is the purpose of customer success? Like, what do we mean by it? And then what do we mean by customer experience? Getting us to a great customer experience and then a great, which leads to customer success. So how I look at it is like, what does my customer want and why? I keep going back to the what and the why. And then how does that align with what us as an enterprise, whatever that enterprise may be, however big or small, want to accomplish. And then I think about customer experience as the end customer. I think about all the people that have to work together internally and partners that have to work internally to make, I could think of them as customers as well. So we've got to align all of that with like a vision and alignment, business, customer journey, business process, and then data and technology. And so to back to your question, Rich, like I look at customer data and the promise of customer 360, which we've all been after for at least 25 years that I can think of, and my gray hair attests to that, right? Whatever you call that thing, that magic, right. We've been talking about siloed architectures of people, of siloed people organizations, siloed architecture, siloed technology, all of these as sort of these verticals that somehow have to marry up to this customer that's coming across this way and needs us to be empathetic, where we're not usually as an enterprise. So that's how I think about the problem space and then the vision of, wouldn't it be cool if I just engaged with the Rich and Andy team, I can engage with them however I want to as a customer, whatever channel that is, whatever modality that is, and they're so smart that they know about what I'm interested in or what I'm going to be talking to them about. They're proactive. And like when I contact them or when I'm at a store and I need something, I'm going through commerce now, but whatever that value stream is, that journey, that customer journey is, that's like, how do we make it so good and amazing that this customer wants to come back to us? This customer becomes a proponent for us. So that's what I think about from a customer journey perspective and customer experience perspective. And I keep going here, but I guess that's because I'm on the special team with Rich and Andy. I think one thing, like there are companies that are out there that are like this. I think of American Express from a B2C perspective that just is on the dot, and they also do it for B2B. And I think of the customers, I mean, think of Amazon from our own consumer perspective, Netflix, who does amazing work for recommendations. So let me pause and say, that's what I think about customer experience.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would agree. And I like the empathy piece. I was just saying to somebody, I said, I don't know if it's age, because I think when I was younger, I wasn't as empathetic. I was more like, got to go get it done, right? And push it through. I think that, you know, these customer experience projects and technology projects alone are complicated. They're hard. And we don't always think through all the stakeholders, challenges, pain points, and just having a little bit of empathy of saying, guys, this change is really big. This is not only affecting your customers, but your people as well. And so how are we really looking at this, right? And how are we actually changing how we work? I think that empathy goes a long way, and I don't think there's enough of it from leadership in most companies to be successful in the customer experience realm.
Are we thinking? Oh, go ahead, Andy.
No, I was going to say, so I agree with you. Those are tremendous examples. And sometimes it's just the little things that make such a huge impact and difference. Mm. Where do you think companies are getting it wrong? What are when you walk into a company, you've been at, you know, different sizes, and you've helped enable so many companies. Where do you think they're getting it wrong? Where do you start?
I mean, where do we start? There's so many places to start, but I can think if we go back to this empathy perspective, are we doing this technology or this transformation program for, and like, what are we doing it for? Like, there's some real tangible business outcomes that we're after. Number one, is everyone actually aligned to it? Now, to go back to the empathy part, what I've seen in the past is their lack of alignment at the very top from like why we're doing it and what we're going to do, that then comes down and sort of spreads into this sort of unsure playground that we're in. But then go back to these programs come through and they're not aligned. Let's say you've got different silos of people, not working teams. You've got working teams, but they're sort of still siloed and they're just pushing stuff through. So a specific example of this is a program that we were involved with where the customer was just going to come hell or high water, push through this transformation set of technologies and come through. And it happened to be for customer service, but it didn't include thinking about what came up front from an ecosystem perspective. Like there were sales and commerce up front. There's onboarding. Forget about all that, apparently. And they're just going to push this through because it's going to meet some incentive that they had from for this exec or this set of executives. And I'm just being real here. That was the reason for the push. Now, it didn't take into account, again, going back to empathy and customer experience, what is the actual agent experience going to be when these changes come through? So this goes to how do we work together, how we don't work together, how does change come in at the personal agent level? And all of this, then you're getting slammed with stuff, as we all have been every day as business users, let's say. You're getting this change. It got turned on a Monday and no one said it was coming. Here it is. I'm working with this customer and now I don't know what I'm doing. This then translates into the end user customer, who is at the mercy of this poor agent who's trying their best, but they have got this big transformation happening with drops over and over again. Like, I think I've actually seen that, and I've seen, unfortunately, transformations get, instead of 100% meeting goal, they're meeting like 20%. So we've spent millions of dollars and we're getting this 20% return. Worse than that, though, is the what happens to our internal customers from what they have to go through. And then what happens the next time transformation comes? They're like, oh, no, not again. or here we go again, which is worse.
Right.
Exactly.
So that's like a tax that keeps going and keeps building. And
so I like that statement. It's a tax that keeps
going.
It is
a tax. It is absolutely a tax. And if you think about, I know that we'll get to AI, but if you think about AI, it is a massive change. Like, the only thing that we can count on, even more so than in the past, is continual change. And it is worth noting, and we talked about this before we got on the call, the people in the process are so critical. Like, the technology is the second place to what are we trying to do? And I love the focus on alignment to the strategy, because we've seen that in our work as well. If that doesn't happen, all bets are off.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah. No, the outcomes piece is also, because I love talking about outcomes. Somebody asked me recently, though, like, where do you start the conversation? And to your point, it's the why. Why are you even doing this, right? Yep. And if people aren't allowed, and again, the stakeholder who may have brought you in, there are those tangential stakeholders, to your point, right? There are those people who are impacted by what we're doing here. And what gets me the most, and I love that tax, I'm going to use that statement. I love it. You're gonna see that as a headline somewhere, because we just pile on. We create technical debt. We charge more money, and people often blame the technology. Well, wait a minute. Yes. A year ago, this technology was going to save us, and now you're vilifying the technology, and you've spent millions and millions of dollars on it because you didn't get your outcome. If we asked why 1,000 times, we'd get to the root cause, and it has nothing to do with that technology. And I wonder how you approach the disconnect between we came in, the why was we want to grow 20%. Great. Okay. We're only growing at 8% now, so we need to grow another 12%. How do you kind of keep them looping back to the goal?
The answer is, it's simplistic and basic, but this is the hardest part. And I know I'm preaching to the choir with you two, but it's like, what type of, when we say governance, when we say alignment, when we say collaboration, what is it we're actually talking about? And we're talking about, I'm using lean governance. We can call it whatever we want to, but there has to be this ecosystem of constantly asking, constantly measuring, constantly going back to the why, to your point, Rich, and saying, are we meeting this need that we said we were going to meet? And does this get us to point X, Y, or Z that we promised? If it's not, are we actually accommodating change, or are we so locked in and into this sort of train that is just going to go? That's what we have to go and work through. This example, I heard this term around radical collaboration, and I love that term. And this is, I'm not taking credit for it. I'm giving it, there's a podcast it's called Lenny's Podcast. And it's a shameless plug, because it's amazing who he has on there. These are all leaders in tech, finance, and the VC community. And so one of these guys came on, he's the managing director at Khosla Ventures. And he talked about radical collaboration, and he talked about, like, if we're going to accommodate how AI is fundamentally going to transform the way we work, why we work, what our outcomes are, then we're going to need radical collaboration. We don't need massive teams. What we need are teams that are really focused. They
cross-functional.
Collaborate radically, cross-functional. And you don't need armies. You just need really motivated, empathetic, let's go back to empathy, and like focused teams that can get stuff done. So anyway, that is how I think about your question, Rich.
Yeah.
I'm going to lean into governance here, but governance very specifically, I don't mean checklists. Like that would be the worst thing you could do, because everyone thinks about governance with that background of like heavy. I come from an architecture background, and in enterprise architecture, you had these stage gates and you had these lock-ins and you had these reviews, and everyone just went to it thinking like, oh God, we're going to get killed here.
Right.
It's going to hold us up. So I think
business governance kind of adopted from that. I think initially it was that, right? It was a lot of checklists and meetings and—
Yes, the methodologies. You
know, the methodologies were so heavyweight. And we talk about this all the time is, you know, your goal with a governance model in the AI world should be is how much stuff goes straight through and where are the exceptions? It's like this highway and there's only an exit ramp for exceptions, right? And I don't think people either are thinking that way yet, but that's truly how we think about, and I think everybody should think about governance now going forward, is I'm handling exceptions through governance and I'm just raising it up, to your point, collaborating radically with the people I need to at the point I need to.
The right moment.
Right moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And when AI can help us to surface that. But I think that there is a lot of reticence to blessing something that I cannot see. You know, and that's where I think that collaboration comes in, is the proof is in the pudding, right? So how many test runs do we need to run to build that confidence in order to say, right, I'm okay with 98%, whatever your number is. Yeah. Also, I think giving the business license to say, if we get it wrong, how do I measure the so what?
If I get it wrong,
1%, 2%, like, okay, what's that follow-on effect? Do I have a mechanism in order to then pull it back? Or can I put a dollar value with it and say, that's the cost of doing business in a newer, faster, better way, and I'm okay with that.
I love that. I love that, because that's different from what we see normally, where it's like, we're not sure about the so what. It's nebulous, it's subjective, and it's you can't make business decisions based on that.
Yeah, yeah.
I just wanted to add to that. Oh, go ahead, Andy.
No, I was just going to say, I think it's really empowering and impactful to those small teams who are making these decisions too, to be able to give them the guardrails. But again, that is governance when you're giving guardrails.
Yes. Right.
And it's just, how do we go faster? Governance should help us go faster.
It should help us go faster. And we keep learning every time we go, which is part of really good governance. I really love this, because there's an example of a client where I saw her C-level leader live this and be that person that leads bravely by saying, by allowing this to happen and pushing this. And the example is between sales and service and that flow that happens there. And this particular customer and her organization were facing things like 30-minute handle times with customers, which is, I mean, you could just imagine there's no digital channel. It was not really useful. So these were for upset customers to start with. That was the reason they were coming in. Then you have a 28 to 30-minute handle time for a thing. Now, what happened was the solutions folks, whatever you call them, were coming at this with technology and pushing technology to fix this. And we've all lived this, right? And for good intent, it wasn't that there was a good intent. That's what they know. But this leader was like, hey, listen, I need to understand, like, what is my customer actually facing? And I need to understand the customer journey. And I need to, like, be brave enough that whatever we find, everyone's involved to fix it. Like, it's not my problem. It's not their problem. It's our problem as this company. And I'm just using this generically because I'm saying company because it's massive. And so what she did is she said, whatever we find, let's first figure out the customer journey the business processes that support it. Then let's get to the, and then let's get with the people as well, the organizations, and then let's get to the data and the technology. But start with the journey across. And by the way, we'll find these holes, like we all know we will, but it's not a blame game. Instead, what we're going to say is, hey, we found it together. Whoever has it, doesn't matter. Unfortunately, whatever silo has it, doesn't matter. Instead, we'll do a new way of working where we're going to go this way across versus siloed, and then work these issues in a prioritized manner. So what gets fixed, like low-hanging fruit, as well as big things, get fixed when and why? This sounds simple now that I'm saying it back to you. This took at least a year and a half to do.
Right.
Well, right? That's exactly right. But to your point, to have the vision and to have the courage to say, we're going to break this down and we're going to solve this, and then the tenacity to see it through. Because to see something through in today's corporate environment that takes a year and a half, there is not an appetite for those very often. And so that really does take the courage to keep driving.
I love the word courage. That's better than brave. I was using brave, but it's courage. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, because how many leaders do we see do that? I mean, how many leaders do you see stick their neck out and say, guys, it's going to be unpopular. And no, I'm not going to fix the 30-minute wait time in 3 months with a new technology solution. I'm going to fix it long term with this solution. Because, you know, I was talking to somebody about this. When these transformation programs go, right, they're all often technology led, as you discussed, right, Raj? They don't come in and say, hey, let me walk through the entire customer journey, and then let me select the right technology platform for that. They talk about their pain points. The vendors come in, they say, oh, look, that vendor does it the way I want them to do it. And then they go through. But as you pointed out earlier, there's technical debt, the tax from the last transformation and the transformation before that. They're not taking into account, they're taking into account where the pain is today, not where the pain is going to be in the future, right? So by the time they launch this, it's like, you know, when they build new roads, well, there's 200,000 cars going over this road and it was only built for 100,000. So we're going to build three more lanes. Well, by the time they build those three more lanes, they built it for 700,000. Now there's a million cars going through it, right?
Yes.
So when you go through this and you work with these executives, how many are courageous? How many are brave? How many take this and say, it's not a technology solution I'm after, it's a business outcome? Or is that something you're always driving? Is that the conversation they really need you to drive because they are not?
I think this is a hard question, Rich and Andy.
Don't alienate anyone. Be politically correct.
No, I think there's like time to be courageous as well to you, and right, what the word is. And I think that the majority, I would say the majority have good intent and they really want this to work this way. And the thing is that circumstances happen, changes happen in the business. We talked about reorgs in our past where that come in, players change. I think they need us to sort of push this for them. Like, I think they really do have good intent. I think what happens with courage is you have courage up to a certain point, but then you're also a human being and you have to put food on the table. I'm just going to use those terms. And you have a life that means that you've got to, you know, do all those things. And that's where sort of like the rubber meets the road. I think there's that point where that tension point that comes in then that says, okay, do I do the thing that I really want, I know is the best thing to do for us going forward and keep doing that? Or do I do the thing that's going to make the least impact, the least harm right now to my organization and me? There's only a handful of real C-suite leaders that sort of take the hit and keep going. I don't see the majority that way. They have good intent to start with. Like this person that I'm alluding to, the story that I'm alluding to, is someone who's extraordinary and who is no longer at this company, but who is now advising C-suite because she's able to do that because of this, of what she did. So,
and because we need more of that, because it is some of the long-term thinking. We tend to, because of all of those pressures, whether it's pressures from the board, pressures from your leaders, you know, whatever it is, we tend to be short-term thinking. And so maybe how do you break it down into pieces, but you still want to keep that that long-term vision. But it goes to your original point, which alignment to strategy is number one. And if strategy doesn't shift drastically, then maybe we've got a chance of writing that story.
Yeah.
I'm going to shift a little bit because talking about courageous, you've done some really cool things in AI. And I think anytime you're experimenting with new technology, like there is a bit of courage because let's be real. We keep saying, okay, AI, like fail fast, but nobody really wants to fail.
Everyone talks the talk about failing fast.
Yeah. But tell us your AI stories.
So, I mean, I think where it's worked at Ford as an example, near and dear to Rich and in my heart is where Salesforce came in and did the right thing. And our technology team, a superb technology team at Ford Pro, we were talking, this is when in the end of 24 and the beginning of 25, where features and functions were being pushed around how do you assist the agent? How do you assist the customer? How do you make things better for operations so that use the power of AI to take care of the sort of mundane work and then let this human like take the cognitive load off the human that they're doing where they're patching together multiple screens and their OneNotes and their Post-its. Instead, let them focus on like helping this customer. What we did was we used the customer journey, the business processes that support the journey, rank them to figure out how we could actually impact the agent and then the customer. And so what we did is we tried out things like case summarization, which is like bread and butter stuff for any service organization. Things like service replies or email replies, which go out to chat and doing a reply for them, email and doing a reply for them. What we did is, though, we tested this in a way that allowed us to fail. And what we mean by failing is, did the LLM actually produce the results that we wanted it to produce? Did we train it in a way that was effective? So that failing means that we just have to keep training it better.
That's learning.
Exactly. So that's actually learning. Actually, good point. That's learning. That's failing, but we're learning because of it. We're getting better and better. Now and then we were able to take this to production, bring down increase customer satisfaction, which is key.
Right.
Reduce handle time, which is key from an efficiency perspective. If you can do both and grow experience while being more efficient, that's like the nirvana of what we want. Now that's like a good example. Then there's the not so great example, which is I'm not going to say where, I'm just going to say in my past, where we've tried to do this with AI, we've brought in technologies, companies where they've got a great story, potentially great technology as well, but we're just pushing stuff in, no governance or very lack of governance. If that's a way of speaking, lack of governance. And then like just trying to say, why isn't this working? So everyone's doing these, what's the wording I'm looking for? Like these fire drills that are called pilots, but the execs are looking at dashboards where people have spent days, if not weeks, looking at that dashboard to get it ready for that exec. And they spent hours looking at the one-liners. Meanwhile, that's all like saying green, red, yellow, and why, but no one's actually going to what we originally wanted this for. You have so much of that. And then when it failed because there was lack of alignment about what we wanted, but it was actually lack of oversight and like, why did we actually bring these guys in and what was the reason for it? And then we've got four of them, by the way, that are all doing the same thing. And we're wondering why these pilots failed, where we're not managing them. We're not focusing them. But what we got instead is Andy, Rich, Raj, we had the same sort of thing. We are duplicating effort. Right. Our spend is there. So,
I think you have similar stories and
part of
similar
this
successes.
Is, right. Like the silos drive me insane. Mm. I think it's the worst way to run a business. And I think AI is going to drive a lot of visibility into the silos, right? Because at the end of AI is data, and everyone's going to start consuming data. So if I can get to the same access of data that you can, whereas prior I probably couldn't, right? So if you think of somebody in sales, it's harder for them to mine success data, right?
Yes.
Or it's was harder for them to mine marketing data. You talked about this at the beginning of the call, the 360 degree of the customer we're trying to pursue. I think the technology now is finally there that we can have that, right? And providing the data is good.
There's always a caveat.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Assuming the data is perfect, which it never is, but let's assume it is. I, as a sales leader, would theoretically be able to ask any question about my client that sits within my company walls, right? Even outside of it, right? Research. So when we talk about these silos and you think about the AI conversation that needs to be had with these companies and these leaders, how do you envision the transformation conversation changing as a result? Because prior, I would say, once you got the requirements, you did really have to say, is this out of the box? Do I have to customize this? How much is this going to cost? Right. And then there was always that, like, well, okay, these features are going to be phase two because we know it's going to cost more money. Right. Like, there was always that. I think there's a lot less of that with AI.
I'm going to use the word that everyone hates, architects use all the time. I think it depends. I think it's
how you're going to.
Yeah. Go. Please argue with him.
I think what AI does is it unlocks all the silos that you hate. It unlocks all the issues that come with the silos, the data silos, the system silos, the process silos, and the people silos. It's going to show what all those things are. So that's to me, that's how I think about it. That's number one. The other thing, though, is I do think in what you're saying, where we're now empowered, because in our own world, in our own private lives, we can go to ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, whatever, and get quick answers to things that would take a long time in the past. So now if I'm a sales leader, again, to your point, if I'm a marketing leader, where I have to wait for like days, hours, I get these dashboards, right? I've got to go picking through, do I trust this data? Do I not trust this data? Now I'm able to basically say, help me, whatever the model is, and get something that's actually something that's mine that it can keep learning. So I think that is powerful. And I think that is going to unlock something.
How do you think that's going to change how you would approach transformation or you would approach executives?
So let me take a step back and thank you for asking this. So when I was evaluating vendors for work around the customer journey and business process from commerce sales, so lead to cash, and then within that service, onboarding and success, we were focused on like, what do we know about our customer? What are they telling us from a voice of a customer perspective? And I don't just mean survey at the end of a call and then a contact. I don't just mean that. I mean real voice of the customer. What do we mean by that? We mean like, when they're talking to us, do we have sentiment about Rich or Andy real time talking to us, getting to some data, a place where it's actually live and telling me what's happening with Rich and Andy, right? So to me, AI now, go back to the AI point, like how does this change the conversation about transformation? It changes it by saying what's possible now. Mm-hmm. So if I'm thinking about the customer experience, the customer voice, the customer journey, and I'm thinking about transformation in the world of AI, I'm now able to understand what Andy wants versus what Rich wants. And I can now take whatever we call this magic bubble of AI data process and bring it to bear. Now, that's what we do to impact Andy's experience and Rich's experience, because we understand what they want. We understand it real time. With what you brought up about AI, we can see what's happening to her and we can be proactive in how we address her. Now take all that and now say, okay, so Raj, how do we do that internally in a transformation scheme? What has to happen is we have to go back to what is it we're after to what do we want to get out of all this? We want intimacy with our customer, as the example. We want our return on investment for this, for technologies and for this offering, for this product to go up by X, Y, and Z. Okay, what does that actually mean to the how? Well, when we would normally do our how with vendor A, vendor B, vendor C, and pick, and then figure out how do we do this together, we now have these rich solutions possible with AI. So we still have to do the hard work. we still have to be able to say, okay, what is the landscape going to look like? How does this get me to delivery points where my engagement with the customer gets to a better level, where my ROI gets better? We still have to have governance that's, you know, what was the wording we were using? Radical collaboration.
Right.
We have to keep learning. All that is still there. It's just that we have tools now that can get us there faster and be offer more and sooner. Right. It also means that the need for governance is more important now, not just for the risk to market, not just for the risk to the brand, but for how we work. Like, yeah, it's right. Really more important.
Because it's the agency of the individual. They have all of this in front of them, but now they've got to make the right decision to go right. forward with
yes.
it, which I think
yes.
is that governance that we don't necessarily think about governance and potentially skill development to think of that higher level, because it used to be like, I do my little piece in the cog. Well, now you've got so much more power to take it further, but you need to know right. where you're driving.
Different skills. I think it's the human piece that you're addressing, Andy and Rich, which is we're seeing it now, right? We're seeing where they're saying, well, especially with customer service, especially with any kind of human work that can be automated quickly and fast.
Right.
And we're seeing that they're worried about job reduction. We're worried about whatever, you know, but like, what can we do now to let that cognitive load be taken away from them, to have them now focused, have skills now focused on higher calling, where they're actually like more work that humans can do that can actually impact my customer in a better way.
Right.
So that if we were to go back to that amazing leader that I'm talking about and talk to her now, we should, because she would be so enthused about what AI can do for her and that original problem. Because where we did journey mapping, where we did business process mapping, working through this on whiteboards and technology, like and all the work that we've all done, right?
Right.
Now you can use tools where it'll look at what you already have and show you what current state looks like through automation. Doesn't mean it's going to be perfect, but you're
right.
not starting from scratch, right? You're starting with something that's already there that you can then like morph and change. And then these tools that are out there now, there's one that's amazing. It's called Cresta. It's called Cresta AI. It's purpose built for customer service, right? Yeah. And it's built that way by Stanford, Google, customer care folks that have built this for customer care. What they're able to do is understand what the customer is doing, and they've looked at your company's business processes and said, okay, this customer is thinking this. Based on what I know about your business process, here's the best way to deal with this.
Hmm.
Now, when you make that real for an agent, it makes life simpler. They can now let automation work this magic and go start working on things like, wouldn't it be cool, customer A or customer B, we see the white space, basically, that you're not taking advantage of, and we can propose this for you. This is what it unlocks. That's just one small example.
Well, and I like the soundbite I take away from a lot of what you said is the you still have to do the hard work. I think that there's this perception that AI is taking away the hard work. And Andy, to your point, it's no, we're replacing the basic stuff that honestly takes up your day and
yes.
defers the hard work, right? Because we're all going to do the easy work before the hard work, right? And it's really to get something like a Cresta AI to be super efficient, you still have to understand who you are as a company.
Yes.
You have to document that. Like, I think people assume, oh, I just got to type a couple of prompts and this is going to just map out my entire thing. And it probably, to your point, gets you 80% of the way there.
What you're saying is right on, which I maybe may have glossed over, but I did not mean to. The technology unlocks all these possibilities. Your
right.
point is spot on, which is you still need to know what you actually want out of this, why, and then where you want to implement this. It still has to be done, no matter what.
And that's the work we're talking about humans doing in the future, right? I would assume this is where when we say human in the loop, human out of loop, like, guys, don't go and whiteboard it. Put it in a document and throw it into the AI and let us collaborate with the computer to get faster. But then bring to your peers and to the team a working prototype. that you can then say, well, why doesn't this work? And how does this connect? And what is the problem? Did we solve it? Did we create another thing, right?
It's a tool. It's an amazing set of tools that give you more information, and it lets you do the human connection better if you use it properly, if you allow it to use properly. Like there's this world where whiteboarding is critical for collaboration, for real human collaboration and consensus building. Like that is so important. That doesn't go away. But your point,
right?
I may be putting words in your mouth, but your point is, hey, we can still give you something to start with. You work on it, put it back in, and then we've got working prototypes that can show you what's possible quicker.
Right. Years ago, when I was working in banking, we had this offsite, and I think it was Sapient who we used. We went to their offices, and they broke us into pods, and there's a facilitator in the front of us. There were two people behind us. We're talking, and they're asking questions, and we're saying, no, it does this, does this. All while we're doing that, these people in the background are typing, and when we're done with the conversation, they printed out a workflow. And they said, this is what you guys just said.
Yes.
And we were then able to say, oh, no, wait, change this, change that, change that. They were AI. Like, this is the 90s, right?
Exactly.
But I mean, but that's what we're talking about is, like, collaborating as a team of people and shoving in all our knowledge and saying, this is how we think it should look. And, you know, going back to the empathy and the silos, well, this is how it looks from my side. This is how it looks from my side. Well, I look at it this way. Okay, well, here's where we agree. And a big red circle is here's where we don't, guys. So now what we have to solve for is the big red circle. Whereas I think prior we would have solved for the whole workflow, or we would have continued to try to solve for the whole workflow.
Yes. We can get through the red circles faster. And yeah. They're, I'm thinking of these big red circles. I love this example because we've all been in these workshops where, you know, we've got these big drawings and then there's an aha or aha set of moments where we see these big circles.
Yep.
There's one more real life example that just, there's a small company called Lynx Analytics, just so you know, and their focus is life sciences. But Rich, just to what you said, their magic is they've got tons of models of their own that they bring AI models to this. Their magic is this human connection, which is they will, from a marketing perspective, they will help you figure out on your channels and your methods of what you're putting out there to touch your customer, whatever that customer is, whoever that customer is, what's working, what's not working. They do it through a combination of journey, instrumentation of what you're putting out there, and then is it actually working and why isn't it working? But they start with, back again to this workshop model of what is it you're after and why, and using AI to automate those journeys and those workshops so that you can actually get to something quicker. So you're seeing it in action as you go. And this customer is saying, hey, what if I tweak this? Wouldn't it be cool? And they're like, yeah, you can do it. Let me show you an example.
Let's shift gears a little bit. Raj, you've lived so many experiences. What are the practical advice that you would give to somebody? Maybe it's somebody who's bringing AI to their customer journey, but maybe you would stop before the AI. What is your best advice for somebody who's heading into a transformation in their space?
I know I've said it already so far, but I go back to the what. Like, what are you actually trying to solve for and why? It sounds basic and simplistic, but it's like the most important thing. You know, there's this methodology about the five whys. Like, you just keep asking why. Like, I think that's that hard work or that rigor. If you get that down as a leader, then it makes everything else and how you communicate your story, what you're trying to accomplish, and the why that much easier. So you have to start there and get that down. You can have help with, get help, get people to help you, get Andy and Rich to help you. But that's a shameless plug. But get that down. Once you have that down, like, spread that with your business counterparts. You should be, whether you're the business owner or you're the technology owner, it should be aligned with your peers. Like, and maybe we should use radical
collaboration. I love that. That is such a takeaway.
I love it. If we can call that courageous, let's call it courageous. It shouldn't be courageous.
It is.
It should be table stakes, right? Like I shouldn't have to enterprise transformation leaders that when we were given a role to play, I shouldn't have to go and work with several different business units and have to then get the collaboration started at that point.
Right.
It would be amazing if I had started it earlier. Next part. Let's say we did that properly and we did the handshaking properly. Then there's like this matrix world that we live in where we're influencing, we're leading and we're influencing people that are not necessarily invested in what our outcomes are doing. That's the reality of what we're doing. So have a plan of who you go and what is it that's going to motivate them. Like have some return, shared obligation, shared return, a shared calling that happens. Like that's critical. And then just to go back to our world of architecture and Rich's famous answer to Rich about it depends. Like have the technology team with us in all of this. Like have them asking the whys. Have them respond. Like it should be, when I say collaboration, it's a partnership.
Right.
And that's like so critical. Again, these are like basic things that get lost every time we go into these multi-million dollar transformations and we don't come back to it.
The interesting thing about keeping technology in is what I always explain, because I've sat in IT, I've been in strategy roles. And what I always explain to people is, and it goes back to your tax comment, is what IT now has to figure out is issues around data leakage. So are we putting data in multiple systems? Are now we at risk? We now have to deprecate systems that you no longer want. What do we do with that?
Yeah.
How do we deal with that? When do we deal with that? Because if you're not doing a full-blown, cutover, then there are pieces of the technology that don't match. And what if there are gaps? What do we do? Right? And so to your point is...
That.
By partnering and sitting there, the traditional way of doing things was the business makes a whole bunch of decisions and then they pass it on to IT. Then IT has a whole bunch of questions. They go back to the business. Well, yes. They're sitting there. They're making decisions, right? They're assessing their why and their how. And they're saying, okay, well, wait a minute. We got to make this decision. We're going to make this decision. But you're now putting it back on the transformation. And traditionally in the silos, it was put back on the team. Right. So then IT is like, hold up, like 6 months ago, you bought this tool and it was the best tool ever and it was going to solve all your problems. Now we're here 6 months later replacing the tool that you thought was the greatest thing ever. And I don't see anything different you're asking me to do. Why is this technology work better than that technology? Because my assessment, it doesn't. They're like, well, it's because of X, Y, and Z. Yeah, but you're not changing X, Y, and Z. You're just changing the technology. So go back to the empathy discussion is that's where the frustration lies. And that's where empathy needs to go back and forth. And it's a funny cycle that we see these people get into.
You're spot on. And there's so many places to take this. And it has nothing to do with AI. It has nothing. All this has to be, this human condition has to be addressed no matter what you're doing. Rich, just to go back to where you are, if we had the IT technology leaders as business partners at the beginning, asking these hard questions, to your point, it goes back to ways of working. Like, can we change the ways we're working so that we're doing this collaboration up front all the time? So that I would have taken into account the tech debt, any of the data issues and privacy issues that are going to be there that are going to be even more important to address early. I've actually brought this up with Andy, the business user who's pushing this amazing transformation in place, but she now recognizes what I have to go through. Like all that is upfront and continuous versus like the over the fence thing. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
I do think that our now courageous governance, let's use that one.
Love it.
Is important now because we will change the way we work. We still need the what and the why. We'll change the how we're working now. We'll change like collaborative teams, smaller teams powered by all this amazing tech, but still like the North Star is still there. And like how we're working is like the magic that we focus on.
Who do you think in a company should be driving that message? If we were to say that everything you just said, you sit around the room with the executives and they're all like, yep, yep, yep. Who do you think at a company should be driving that message? CEO, COO?
C-level, no matter what.
No matter what.
Right? Like leadership, like real leadership is, we need real leadership. We see it. We see words, not deeds, right? Mm. That's the thing. So everyone, the human condition, everyone knows when they're smelling something that's just PowerPoint or just words, or it's actually meant. Like, and you can see the C-level living it. If it go down, then the business unit, the technology teams, all those leaders need to be doing the same thing. If we don't have that, we're going to go back to this other cycle that we've just been trying to like not do. So
right.
I would say it's the C-level. Yeah. And wouldn't it be cool if the lowest player in a lowest, whatever you call that, that person that's actually living and touching the customer has so much trust that the C-level gets their, what they're having to go through.
Yeah.
That would be empowering. I don't see that every day.
But I'm going to take a word you keep on using throughout the pod is a C-level that's aligned.
Mm.
As you keep on going back to the word aligned, which is the right word to use, right? I mean, we've seen so many times with executives, like to your point earlier is, well, this is my mission. It's no, we're all agreed that we start from this place, and no matter how much we spread it out, we always come back to this place.
Yes. I was going to, let me use the word preach, Rich. Go ahead. That's it. Go back to our previous conversations. I think that's the magic. Yes. Yeah. How empowering is that? Like, that's right. Empowering.
Right. And it's empowering for those people who own those areas, but it's also empowering, to your point, is to the person who is taking that support call, to the sales rep who is trying to convince that customer that you're the right company to buy from and to partner with. You know, every role within the company, most people come every day and take their job really seriously. And you see more often that the people on the kind of ground level, I will say, are collaborating more than the people who are giving instruction. And you often wonder, you're like, well, what? Like, have you not talked to each other? Because we know it's a problem. You guys don't see that, right?
Every day we see that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Wouldn't it be cool if they just talked? Like, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Nice. Excellent. Okay. Well, this has been really, really helpful. And I think super interesting. I've really enjoyed this conversation. Raj, where can people find you? LinkedIn?
You can find me on LinkedIn under M. Raj Rao.
Perfect.
And I'm happy to speak with anyone, talk to anyone about transformation, about real life, and how we can make it better and make the customer experience the best thing possible. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
We got to find another topic because this has been so much fun.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's find the next one and get it on the books.
Yes. Well, I think there's plenty to choose from, actually.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, a lot of the stuff that you brought up, it just has tentacles into so many aspects of the business. And so you really can deep dive into it. And you have such a breadth of experience with all the clients you've done this for that you've kind of, you know, I would say you just kind of twist the thing a little and it's a different dimension of that same story. And you have a lot of dimensions to the stories you can share.
I think I really appreciate that. I think that goes for the both of you too. And people that we know, the three of us know in our ecosystem, I think there's like magic there. So
Yeah. Well, this conversation will definitely continue because it's not going to go away until we solve every
There will always problem. Be new problems. This is what we know. We have enough gray hair to know.
Right. Yeah. Well, you guys at least have hair.
New technology.
I love it. Thank you both.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. Bye.